How y'all doing? I'm Peter Witt, so I guess I'll get us started here. Today's project, or at least today's presentation, will be about sustaining mechanisms using community-based participatory research while we worked in a minority community in Cleveland, Ohio. And of course, we have to disclose that none of us have any financial gains or commercial interests or relationships with the work that we're presenting today. Our objectives for today is to basically understand how to develop a partnership with community agencies and identify methods for sustaining projects at the local level. Barbara Israel, who's a leading authority in this particular in community-based participatory research, wrote some key elements in one of her books. And the first and last key elements are the ones I want to focus on for today's presentation. One, CBPR builds on strengths and resources within the community and involves long-term processes and commitment to sustainability. As we think about our funding that we receive from the National Institutes of Health through the National Center for Minority Health and Health Disparities, these were the aims that we submitted for the project. In terms of partnerships related to this project, St. Vincent Charity Hospital was our lead community partner. One of the reasons they were selected is because of the work they had been doing in the community for such a long time through a project called Building Healthy Communities, which really embraced community grassroots initiatives, and it was resident-driven. The infrastructure for BHC was really based on having residents engaged in facilitating subcommittees. We were able to continue that process with our project, and we developed an advisory committee, and that became a subcommittee for our project. And they actually self-identified as the Central Community Healthy Group, which was key and when you think about ownership and accountability for CBPR. While that was taking place, one of the things we had to do was define a focus. We wanted a community wanting to address obesity, and that was simply it, obesity, but not necessarily knowing what the communities wanted to address as it related to obesity. After touching 419 individuals, they suggested us we should focus on prevention, children, wellness and education. The interesting thing is, if you look at the tier, it was children first, then women. So what came out of that is we should have a family component to whatever we do. As we continued our work, we needed to drill down a little bit further because we realized that while we wanted to focus on children, we had not engaged the youth that much in the initial process of getting the information we needed. So we held an appreciative inquiry process where over half the participants were youth. And that really afforded us more in-depth information as to their concerns. What came of that was an actual intervention, at least a framework, I should say, of an intervention. And they were really interested in hip-hop dance, quite frankly. Now, the parents, on the other hand, said, let's not limit our community to hip-hop. We want cultural dance as well. So we made sure we included that, as well as having some more activities around wellness and education, in particular for urban community. At that time, we partnered with our health, and I have to get this right, physical education and recreation dance department, and Mary, say hello, who's taking pictures. She is one of the staff members from there, to help us frame what that actual pilot intervention should look like. Once we were able to do that, we went on to develop the actual pilot intervention. We implemented four cohorts. They met 3 days a week for 12 weeks. And it really was based on a framework of an after-school program. And it turned out to be a wonderful project, and a lot of youth in the community benefited greatly. In terms of the community itself, because I'm just one third of this presentation here, the actual demographics of this particular community is very, it stands out in Cleveland, Ohio. It's one of the most densely areas of public housing between New York and Chicago. And if you think about how this community is set up, at least in Cleveland, they look at your inner ring your city SPAs or statistical planning areas, your city neighborhoods, and then there's the outer ring and inner rings, well, inner ring suburbs and then outer ring suburbs. Interesting enough, in your the average number of female-headed households in a Cleveland neighborhood is around 27%, the average. In this particular community, it's 56%. So that could give you an indication as to how dense the public housing is. In terms of the poverty level, at least approximately 75% are below poverty level in this community, and it is a predominantly African-American community. The other key fact about this neighborhood is that it is surrounded by institutions. St. Vincent has to be one of the institutions that's anchored in the community, but there's a community college and several other social service entities in this neighborhood. I think I'm supposed to stop and pass it on to Lena at this point. Thank you.
All right, now I have to bring this back down. All right. Thanks, Peter. Okay, so adjusting to our community culture. There were two areas that we had to use as we talked about culture and our community that we worked with. And the first one was realizing that there were invisible boundaries. Now, we worked in a particular community, but within that community, there were sub-communities. And this originally started with the housing development, the design of the public housing. So in the beginning, it was supposed to be a very strategic thing that they gained their own identity. So they were able to name the public housing, but ultimately this became more of a dividing situation than a unifying situation. So we recognized that this embedded thinking was not just incorporated in the youth, but it was very generational. So even the older adults, they didn't go to certain parts of the community because that didn't belong to us. That didn't have our name on it. So because of these invisible boundaries, we were very strategically about how we held our meetings, what the meetings encompassed. And so we were able to gain two different benefits from this. The first one, because we had held our meetings in different areas of that same community, we were able to have the residents mingle and meet other different residents from different areas that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do. And also, it eased the tension between the different groups. So we used an empowerment-based approach, and basically we gave the group applicable skill sets that would assist them in becoming better informed decision makers and leaders. So leadership training based on their interests, and this is very near and dear to my heart, because in the very beginning of our initial CBPR probing into the community, they said, yes, we'll be a part of your group, but what are you going to give us? So out of that came this initiative, and they wanted, one, to learn more about nutrition. If we're going to be advocates in our community, we need to have that skill and that experience. So we solicited the expertise of OSU Extension, and that's where they were able to do role play activities that focused on meal planning and also how to deliver nutritional information to children, as well as the food pyramid. I'm with St. Vincent Charity Hospital. Peter and Kendra is with CSU. So through our collaboration, we were able to deliver a leadership program that focused on individual and community asset mapping, finding the best out of what you already have, and then facilitation skills and leadership and community accountability. And at the end of each of these programs, they receive certificates. So now we have our program. And as leaders and members of the community, the group decided that they have this information for themselves, but they just can't keep it to themselves. They needed to make sure that their friends knew. They wanted to share it with their families. They wanted their neighbors to know how they can become empowered to live healthy lifestyles. So they did this by creating these cards. And as you see, it's why be healthy, you know? I could buy something for 99 cents and be full, so why should I be healthy, right? So they talked about how they can make it affordable. They talked about how you can have quick, simple, but healthy meals versus the fast food stuff. They talked about identifying places to receive reduced priced or free fresh fruits and vegetables. And at the summer, they began their health campaign, and their slogan was eat healthy, feel good, live longer. Mechanisms for sustainability. Now, the first part of this, which Peter talked about very briefly, was the process of creating ownership of the group. And they did this by a self-naming process, which Peter talked about, CCHG. Central Community Healthy Group. Now, we had the children in the very beginning to identify places that they felt comfortable and safe belonging to a program with. So I'm just going to put all this together very quickly. The kids said, yes, I want us to be a part of this rec center. We said, okay. So we went to that rec center, and we said, how can we get the kids here? They told us how to recruit. We went to the researchers to say, this is where we're going to hold the program. And unfortunately, that particular rec center did not have central AC. And this was in the middle of summer. Yes. So that was very fun for all involved. But just to think about the sustainability and the collaboration, the resolution was the researchers were very flexible, because they knew this is what the kids wanted, this is what we could do within the resources that we had. So they incorporated outside activities to accommodate all of those and address the issues that were apparent. So we are running out of time. That's what happens when you split it up with three people.
Just be really brief. One of the things we wanted to do was discuss the mechanisms, but also the benefits to the community agencies and the academics. So real quick, for the community, it was about, CBPR is about empowerment, and so we did offer leadership and engagement. We also, this project built leaders and continuously built community leadership. The CCHG group, even now, is recruiting their neighbors and other residents to be part of our committee, as well as the summer program that Lena discussed. Oh, wrong way. Okay. And then the agencies also benefited as well. They increased their visibility within the community, as well as the research community. But it was also important for this project to leave viable skills within the community. And so one of the things we did was we identified two community residents for each intervention site. They ranged from late teens to local parents. They received a stipend, they participated in the intervention, and they got to see how the wellness, education, rhythmic movement activities were delivered. And then each of the facilities also received a resource manual and equipment. Again, it was important for us to leave something with the community. And then finally, CBPR is important for the university. The university developed a trustworthy partnership that they were able to use in future research projects, not only in this community, but other communities as well. And then real quick, I know we glossed over this project and it has several different components. And so we have a progress report that I'll leave here and you guys can read about it further. Also, this presentation was about the sustaining mechanisms of this project. One of the major components of this project was the health intervention. So we'll be presenting on that at APHA on Wednesday at 10:30. And so I have flyers for that as well if you want to learn more about the actual health nutritional and rhythmic movement intervention. But as you can see, it took an army to do this project. And thanks for your time.